This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeline Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, Lords of Misrule, tricksters, con artists, and grifters in speculative fiction. And it's appropriate that we start this episode by giggling, apparently, because this is the day after April Fool's Day, considering the subject matter. It's kind of my fault as well.
It is entirely your fault, right? Okay, so the way we do the recording is that we're obviously in different counties, so we do it over the internet. So we were all prepped and ready to go, and Jules called in on Skype and I answered, and in my usual sort of jovial, friendly fashion, I said hello. And what does Jules do? I say hello and I hear this loud snort from the other side.
You know when you just, you know, King Laugh knocks on the door and you can't keep him out, kind of thing? I don't know what just happened.
I haven't said anything yet. I don't know what it was about me saying hello, but apparently that was funny enough to warrant this sort of why? I haven't even made a joke yet. You're already laughing at me.
See, you could just take that as, well, your presence is just so overwhelming that even over Skype. Or you could take it another way and just be emotionally scarred by the fact that I was laughing for no particular reason at you. You're cool.
It's the questions like, funny how? As in funny ha ha, funny funny like a clown.
Like, clowns are creepy.
Yeah, this is true. So, yeah, good start to the episode. Well, I suppose before we go into sort of any of it, I should ask you, did you play any April Fool's jokes, Jules?
No, I didn't. I very rarely think to do that, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
I think to play tricks on people, but not specifically on April Fool's Day.
I'm not restrained by April Fool's. Oh no,
You only get till 12 o'clock anyway, and I was working, so
fair enough. I played one.
Yep.
Yeah, it was just a really, really subtle one. I don't believe in, like, horrible ones. I don't, you know, like, sort of fake pregnancies or anything like that. I don't really believe in that. But I put up a status. And again, this is just my opinion. But I am not for Brexit as a half French, half English person. I'm not for Brexit at all. And so I put up a status saying the more evidence that's coming in, the more I'm starting to think that maybe Brexit is a good idea.
I did see that.
Yeah, I put that up, and there was this, like, for a long time, no one commented.
just tumbleweeds.
Yeah, there's just this. Oh my god,
Facebook.
And then, because I live in a bit of an echo chamber, so and then someone said they were writing out a long reply to me, and then they realised the date. And my father was the funniest reaction, because he said he was on the phone to my brother and he saw the status and he said, and for one nanosecond he thought, oh, someone's got to my daughter. And then he was there like, no, she's playing a trick. But yeah, so that was my April Fool's. I thought it was quite harmless.
See, we always used to try and catch our dad, and like the more we tried to catch him, the more resistant he was to the whole thing. As in, literally would not believe anything you told him till after 12 o'clock on April Fool's Day.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think that's partly why my status was almost believable for a minute, because of the way I worded it. Not actually, I think Brexit is a great idea, but like, I'm starting to think maybe it might be a good idea. It could have almost been like, hold on a second, that seems like I wasn't even happy about the idea that it might be a good idea.
I think the thing was, you were keeping it in character as well, in the sense of, you know, you do, I wouldn't say you're like really politically out there or anything, but you don't hide your lighter under a bushel either, so you will say if you think something's ridiculous or not. So
yeah,
the fact that you put it up like that, it was just like, I looked at it and thought, that's got to be an April Fool's Day. It's got to be. And then I saw that I, for a second I thought, oh, how would that work? And then thought, no, that's an April Fool. Was the whole The Lion King, the live action Simba's going to be gay thing. And then I was thinking, well, I suppose that would be good for the LGBT community, but hang on a minute. Why are Timon and Pumbaa a same-sex couple? Why is no one bothered about the fact that they're having an interspecies relationship? And then I got to the part like, hang on, it's April Fool's Day. It's still April Fool's Day in America.
I mean, Timon and Pumbaa are a gay couple. Everyone knows that.
They probably are, but it never really made me think about the whole sort of physical aspect of it until they talked about doing a live-action version. Which kind of darkened the whole thing for me, to be honest. But no, there was all sorts of people were like outraged by the whole thing.
One of the worst ones was Adult Swim. Adult Swim have been releasing a new series of Samurai Jack.
Yeah.
And they've also been toying with us with the release of Rick and Morty for a ridiculously long time.
Yeah.
And you know, so it's even worse in the UK because. If we never get hold of anything. But yeah, so they've been toying with the American populace and co for a ridiculously long time. And then today, I don't know when it was, but yesterday, when they were meant to be airing the new Samurai Jack episode, they aired Rick and Morty instead. Having not, like, literally they said, oh, it's coming, we just don't know, and so no one knew when the hell it was coming out, and they were like, ta-da!
Harsh.
Such a horrible thing to do.
It really is.
So do we have any idea, actually, where the tradition comes from?
Yes, we do. It comes from the Roman festival of, and I'm not making this up, Hilaria. Which sounds like it should be a made-up thing. I totally get that. But no, it really was called Hilaria, from the Greek word meaning cheerful or joyful. And it was a celebration of joy and good cheer, basically connected with mother goddess worship. Usually Cybele was the mother of the gods. Mm-hmm. And she's an Anatolian goddess who was adopted by various different pantheons and sometimes merged with goddesses like Demeter and not Hera. But earth goddesses, you know, to do with the harvest and fertility and things. So there we go. Yet another fertility festival, basically. Nobody was supposed to show...
Every festival is a fertility festival.
Yeah, everything comes down to sex. Freud was right about that.
That's the only thing he was right about.
So no one was supposed to show grief or sorrow on that day. And to be honest, the real origins are sort of lost in the mist of time. There's one... And I think this might be a made-up thing, to be honest, because it sounds so ridiculous. One person postulated the theory that actually it dated back as far as Noah and the Ark, and it was to do with the fact that Noah was supposed to have released a dove on the 1st of April. Mm-hmm. How they had that when they didn't have the Julian calendar back then, I don't know, but we'll just go with this. and he released the dove, and it was too early, and the dove came back. Because there was no land, the waters hadn't abated. So, you know, he was being a fool on that day. And I'm just like, I'm not sure. I personally think that might be made up, because that to me sounds like a crock of absolute shit.
Yeah, no, that's a bit strenuous. Yeah, that's like, a bit strange, like, to be honest.
But no, there's actually a newspaper article from, I think it's like 1735, sort of talking about this.
Which yeah.
Makes me think, you know... That was a really bad April Fool back then.
Yes, that was actually an April Fool that got taken too far.
That's somebody who on the 31st of March thought, I'm going to go out and get drunk tonight, and then ended up doing a load of laudanum and decided to write an article for the newspaper the following day. In my opinion. So yes, that's where the origins of April Fool's Day come from. And there are various different traditions around the world. But the ones I quite like are the Scottish and Irish ones. The Scottish ones, you've got Anna Gokerach, which is Gowking Day. A gowk is a cuckoo, or a fool. Or it's also known as Laruth and Creche, which is the day of running the cuckoo. Again, day of running the fool. And what they did, what they tended to do, was pick someone, some poor idiot, and give them an envelope or a sealed letter. and say, look, you need to take this to so-and-so. This is an emergency, and send them running off. And then when so-and-so opens the letter, what it says is something along the lines of dinner laugh, dinner smile, hunt the gook another mile, which means send them running along to someone else. So they'd then seal it back up and say, okay, now you need to get this message to so-and-so. And they'd go on and on and on like that. And the Irish have a version of this as well, which traditionally the message inside says, send the fool running a bit further. So so that apparently was the great jape of April Fool's Day, which just goes to show how little there is to do around the Highlands of Scotland.
Also that people really never learn.
No. So there's that one. And there's one that I thought you might like to talk about, because I don't, you might know more about it than I do, which is the French tradition, which is Poisson d'Avril.
Now, I do know a little bit about this, but I'm just going to... Le Poisson d'Avril. Well, I know that there's... Hang on. I'm going to remind myself. Yeah, so they do this in France, and I'm pretty sure we did this in the French school as well, where you stick a fish onto your friend's back. Sorry, not an actual fish.
I think it might have been an actual fish originally.
Probably was a... yeah, originally it was an actual fish. But, you know, what you're doing is you're sticking a picture of a fish, so a drawing or a little cutout of a fish, and you stick it onto their back and wait for them to notice. And when the joke is discovered, when you finally see the fish and realise you've been had, you have to shout "Poisson d'avril." So it's really stupid. But I like the idea that it might have actually once been a real fish, because then, like,
I think
if you didn't notice it, it was clearly because very unclean, because you haven't noticed a fish.
I think that was the point, wasn't it? You followed them around saying how much they smelled or something.
Yeah.
Which is really gross.
Hold on.
But I think that kind of gives you a nice little bit of depiction of the differences in, say, French, Irish and Scottish sense of humour right there.
Yeah. And yet there's the slink of great immaturity between the three of them, so...
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, there was obviously the tradition of the Lord of Misrule. This wasn't necessarily restricted to April, but I've heard of the Lord of Misrule being appointed both in April, May time, mm-hmm. or rather being appointed at the spring equinox, and then actually ruling on May the 1st, so Beltane.
Yeah.
But also they used to do a Christian version. In fact, in Scotland, he was called the Abbot of the Unreason, which sounds very, very, like, quite grim, actually.
The Abbot of the Unreason. It sounds like something you'd hear in Alice in Wonderland or something.
It does, doesn't it?
Go forth, speak to the Abbot of the Unreason.
But then they presided over the Feast of Fools. And obviously the Christians took over this festival, and they called it the Festival of Holy Innocence. But they celebrated that in December. And what they used to do was appoint a boy bishop. And the bishop would officially step down on the 6th of December. And a boy was chosen, usually from the choir, and was made boy bishop from the 6th of December to the 28th of December, which is the Feast of Holy Innocence. And he did used to wear the full regalia and appoint some of his friends to be his attendant priests and make decrees. And he'd do everything except give mass.
Yeah.
And this was all about, from a line in the Bible about, he shall set down the mighty from their thrones.
Oh.
But, yeah, certain, I mean, it got banned by Henry VIII and reinstated by Mary I and then banned again by Elizabeth. And then it got... various other places thought, oh, isn't that a charming tradition, and they started bringing it back.
It's just reminded me actually of a French film, which is actually, oddly enough, it was released on the 15th of April 1998, so not quite the first, but it's called Le Dîner de Con, so the dinner of idiots. And the story is that basically, you have these two guys. One is Pierre. He's a publisher and he does it with a prominent businessman. And they hold these idiot dinners where they try and get hold. They each bring a guest who is the most idiotic person they can possibly find. And basically, what you do is at the end of the dinner, they choose which one is the biggest idiot, and he's the champion. And I think there's a bet on it as well, who can find the dumbest guy. And so, yeah, and they actually have scouts who sort of look for the idiots for them to help them really find some real real fools. And of course, he manages to get hold of one idiot, but then everything really, really goes wrong, and the idiot's actually a genuinely nice guy. It's hilarious. It's really, really funny. So I do recommend it. It's a very good sort of April's film to watch. I also wonder whether something about the weather probably plays into why April Fools falls around this time. You know, if you think that we're moving out of the kind of the colder season into the time of warmth, and you know, I mean, it's glorious out today. I mean, it was raining a bit yesterday, but it's really, really lovely out today. It's beautiful sunshine, the flowers are out, it's warm. I can understand why people would suddenly go, actually, now is the time to be having a festival about laughter and happiness.
Yeah, it would make sense. And, you know, people start acting a bit less lethargic and a bit giddier, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, less now that obviously we don't live quite so close to the land, but before.
Yeah. Just throwing themselves about.
And yeah, I mean, it does bring us to sort of tricksters in sort of mythology and folklore. And there is something to be said. You know, people can go two ways on, say, the traditional Greek heroes who actually were heroic because of what they could do, not because of them being actually heroic.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, they were quite often given special attributes and things. So, and they did awful, terrible stuff as well.
Yeah.
Whereas I think a lot of people got a soft spot for the trickster because they've had to be cunning. They've had to think around things. I mean, like Odysseus, for example, not a very heroic hero, but clearly has some brains as well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I also think, we'll get into this in more detail later. But the trickster characters were also, especially when we come to Loki and sort of Norse mythology, which I will talk about in a little bit more detail, they were kind of the bridge between the gods and the mortals in many ways, because they often made fools of the gods.
Yes.
They brought them down a notch. So when the gods got a little bit too mighty, the tricksters would do something which would make fun of them. And there'd usually be a little chaos because of it. But there was this kind of grounding aspect. And the tricksters were usually powerful, but their biggest thing was that they were clever. They were smart.
Yes.
And that was something that we as people could really, really associate with. And it was also something that, you know, the warriors within a community could really associate with the warrior characters. But the scholars, the, you know, the cunning people, the con men, would be able to associate with this character who's smart and got by for the most part. And even now, we have this soft spot for the smart, sarky character.
Yeah.
Even more so now, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's as you say, it's sometimes easier to see us. It's easier to see ourselves in someone like that than it is someone who's been given special gifts or great strength or,
yeah,
great exactly. Martial prowess or something,
or someone who is unreasonably noble as well.
Yes, I mean, we might like to think we're like that. We might like to escape from ourselves and think about being that sort of person, but deep down we're kind of like, no, I'm the sarky person, the back you know, the sidekick.
Yeah, but I mean, being constantly noble is exhausting and it's unrealistic, really.
Yes, it's great escapism, but it's not,
yeah,
it's not. But no, I was doing a bit of digging on Celtic mythology as well, looking for tricksters.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought, I'm sure we have some. And yeah, probably the best one I found was Gwydion Fabdon, who was a wizard and a Welsh god type person.
Yeah.
Yep. You don't know. Do you know the legends for this one? You might recognise them when I say.
Yeah.
He appears predominantly in the Tingeddau of Arianrhod. And Arianrhod was a lunar goddess who, I don't think she got married. Anyway, she sort of got seduced into losing her virginity and was really quite annoyed about the whole thing. Ended up giving birth to a boy and sending him away. She didn't want to be reminded. Gwydion thought that this was unfair, and Arianrhod had refused to name the child, which in Celtic terms was a real curse. That's a Tingau.
Yes.
Which is the Welsh version of a geese.
Yeah, I do recognise this myth. Anyway, sorry, continue.
In sort of the Celtic tradition, you were given a name by your mother and then you chose a name once you reached your majority, one that suited you, one that your friends called you. But the name given to you by your mother was the one that quite often held secret power over you because it was part of your true self, as it were. So the fact that she refused to name him, aside from being a really big insult, kind of meant that he couldn't have any sort of fate. He couldn't accomplish anything great. Gwydion, once the boy had grown a bit, took him along to see Arianrhod. And there was a display of dexterity. And the boy managed to throw a stone with such accuracy that he hit a wren's leg between the thigh and the foot.
Wow.
And she said, well, the fair-haired one has swift aim. And Gwydion said, well, that shall now be the boy's name, Clewclaw Griffiths, the fair-haired one with swift aim. Arianrhod was actually, I don't know which way it's harder to say, to be honest, in English or Welsh, but Arianrhod was really annoyed about this. So she laid down another tingal on Clewclaw Griffiths, saying that he shall never bear arms unless she gives them to him herself. And Gwydion thought, well, okay, you've just made this a challenge. And tricks her into giving him weapons.
Yeah.
To her son. Which irritates her even more. So she says, he shall never have a human wife. So Gwydion is like rubbing his hands together at this point. He's like, oh, this is a good one. basically says, take the flowers of oak, the flowers of ash, the flowers of broom, and the flowers of meadow sweet. And he fashioned for Clewclaw Griffiths a wife and named her Bludyvet. They christened her, well, not christened her, they baptised her in the Welsh Celtic form at the time. Now there's a whole long story about Bludyvet having an affair with a man because she didn't actually want Clewclaw Griffiths. She wasn't given any choice in the matter.
Fun times.
There you go. Gwydion, wherever he goes, has caused an awful lot of both harm and good, which is the mark of a real trickster.
Yeah. And if you think about it as well, you know, you've got that with Gwydion and you've got that with Merlin as well.
Yes.
And Merlin and Uther. And the way that Arthur was conceived was that Merlin disguised Uther as Igraine's actual husband.
Goliath,
that's it. Disguised Uther as Goliath whilst Uther's men were busy killing Goliath.
It's like, yeah, you weren't lying with your husband last night, lady.
It was me.
Ta-da!
So yeah, that's wrong. But yeah, we have that very sort of tricky kind of thing, which is, and again, what happens is that they have one character who does it, and that character is kind of amoral in a lot of ways, and they're never the main character, because the main character is usually someone more noble, someone of great heart, someone of great power, and they don't then have to be attributed with the wrongdoings of the trickster who's just there to aid them. So everything wrong that happens is sort of held, the trickster is held accountable.
Yeah.
Rather than the main character. So, and it, especially, I really love Loki as a character.
Yeah,
and
me too.
He's a great character, because the way, especially the way I see him and the way I write him, because he does appear in Kestrel Saga as well, and he will, and obviously I'm writing a game at the moment with Enigmatic Studios called Loki: A Tale of Three, and the character of Loki isn't actually Loki, it's a woman, but there's a lot of inspiration coming in there. And the way I write Loki is very much that, again, Loki is there to take everyone down a notch so they don't get high and mighty. Because the way Loki sees it is when people get high and mighty, their guards go down.
Yes.
And they're not trying to improve. And therefore, that's when they become weak and that's when problems start to arise. Decadence is the, you know, is what leads to the end. So Loki's constantly trying to poke fun, but the way I also write him is that Loki will see how far he can go. And one of my favourite stories is the Lay of Theron. Is that what it's called? Where basically Mjolnir gets stolen by giants. And Mjolnir gets stolen by giants, and I'm pretty sure it's Loki's fault. I'm not sure why. I think maybe they sort of threatened Loki, and he was there like, okay, there's Mjolnir, bye. And he kind of let it happen. And then they said, oh, we will give Mjolnir back, but we must have Freya as a as a bride, the main guy wanted Freya as a bride. So Loki goes forward, and Freya is not pleased by this. She will not do it. And so all the gods are like, what will we do? Loki, you tell us what we should do. And he's there like, okay, this is my idea. Let's put Thor in a dress. And they all go, yes. In my mind, I can just see Loki's mind going, I cannot believe they let me go this far. Fantastic. Like, he was just seeing how far he could go, and he just can't believe that for the most part they let him do what he wants. And yeah, it's great, because Loki in Norse mythology, every time they all hate him. I mean, he goes along with a lot of sort of the earlier adventures he's around, but they all kind of hate him. Then whenever there's a problem, it's usually caused by him, and then they all turn to him for the solution as well.
Yes.
And he always manages to kind of get sort of fix everything, which is quite nice. So yeah, they put Thor in a dress and take Thor and pretend Thor is Freya, and it works. Yeah, Loki sort of manages to, because Thor is not subtle, Loki manages to convince them that it is actually Freya by coming up with all sorts of excuses for why Thor is bearded, and why Thor is stuffing his face, and why Thor is glaring at the night when the knight lifts his veil and stuff like that. And it works. They get Mjolnir back, and then they sort of run off. But the other one is the death of Balder. Balder? Is that it? Balder?
Balder, yeah.
Yeah, Balder. Where... Now, this is an interesting one, and for me, I think this is probably what leads, really, to Loki being locked up. When I say locked up, he's tied to a rock by the intestines of his own son, with a venomous snake hanging over him, dripping horrible venom onto him that burns and makes him writhe in agony
into
all
his
eternity.
Eyes, isn't it?
Yeah. And his wife stands there, sits there with a bowl and tries to catch it, but every time she has to empty the bowl out, he has to endure the venom. And that's why we have earthquakes. So what time to that? But yeah, so Balder was beloved by pretty much all of the gods, and I can't remember I'm not sure whether it was his mother, but she basically made a deal with all of the sort of the elements that none of them would ever harm Balder, which basically made him totally indestructible. But she didn't make a deal with the holly tree, because it was still young. It was still a child. And she just didn't think that was fair. So she didn't make a deal with it. And what happened was that, so all the other gods thought this was great, and they, you know, they'd throw whatever they could at Balder, and nothing would happen. So spears, etc. And, you know, they made a game of it. And then Loki presented someone with a tiny dart made of holly.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, yeah, sure, okay. And they threw it, and it killed Balder. And for me, that sounds really harsh, but I think, again, it's that bridge between humans and the gods, where it's saying there are things you cannot do. And that is pure it's pure indulgence in the idea that nothing ever can harm you at all, that you are above death itself. And none of the gods were. In Norse mythology, none of the gods were above death. Death could bring all of them to their knees.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Well, you've got Loki's children are an interesting part of the story. For example, Loki fathered the Fenris Ulf.
Yeah.
Which will be released to devour the world on the day of Ragnarok, including the gods. But the one I like most,
yep,
is when the gods were building the walls of Asgard, or rather they were having them built.
It's one of my favourite stories.
It is absolutely great. There's an unnamed Himthras who owned a fine stallion called Svaldifari, and he was using the horse's strength to perform deeds twice the strength of any other horse, and hauling enormous rocks. And the gods basically blackmailed Loki and said, you know, you're going to have a horrible death if you can't find a scheme that will make the builder forfeit the payment, because they didn't want to pay him.
Yeah, no, because what happened was that he arrived in Asgard as they were sort of building the walls, and he said, I will build you this whole wall in a week or something like that.
Yes.
And in return, I must marry Freya. They all wanted to marry Freya. I think it was Freya. And yes. they were all about to go, no, we won't do that. And then Loki said, hold on. There's no way he alone can build a wall in a week. So let's give him a week and he won't be done. So we don't have to pay him, but then at least we'll have half a wall. And they were like, oh, Loki, you're so smart. And so they totally did it, realizing he had this amazing horse.
So what Loki did was turned himself into a mare. And the mare came out and neighed at Svaldifari, who then broke his tack and raced after the mare. Which was great, because it meant that the guy couldn't finish building the wall. But Svaldifari was a very good stallion and caught up with Loki, who then became impregnated with Sleipnir. Sleipnir was an 8-legged horse who was supposed to be swifter than anything. Now, did Odin look at that horse and think, oh, that's wrong, because, you know, wrong? No, he went, no, that's a sweet child of some weird horse rape. I gotta get me some as a ride, kind of thing.
Well, I just like the fact that Loki went off, disappeared for a while, and no one knew what kind of... I don't think they were particularly concerned. All they knew was
Loki.
He'd done his job, and he was gone. And then the builder actually turned out to be a giant in disguise or something like that.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know how you disguise yourself. Like, are you a giant? No. Are you sure? Yes, I'm not a giant. It's kind of hard to disguise, but I don't know. He managed to disguise it, attacked Thor, hit him with a hammer. So there we go. They had pretty much half a wall. And then Loki reappeared carrying this foal and just silently gives it to Odin. Like, take this. I need to go lie down. But yeah, I like the fact that it wasn't just that Loki appeared as a mare. Loki became female, and Loki actually gave birth to several of his children. It wasn't just that horse.
No, obviously the Fenris Ulf as well.
Yeah. So yeah, Loki got up to all sorts of funky stuff. he's a great character, because I think he's just so undefinable in a lot of ways.
Yes, definitely. And did, as you say, other crazy stuff as well. There was all the gods went to him when there was a problem, and usually the cost was going to be something far greater than he wanted to pay. For example, one of the fates, Skuld, was abducted by a giant who'd fallen in love with her, and her sisters were desperate to get her back because the fates of men weren't being woven into anything. So they were born, they died, and nothing was happening in the middle. So they sent Loki looking for her, and Loki disguises himself as a woman.
And I think it was any excuse he was there.
Do
I get to have a disguise? Yes, Loki, yes!
And basically says, look, you don't want her, she's not interested in you, but me, big boy, I'm all for this, and I'm far fairer than her. So the giant lets Skuld go, and she returns to Yggdrasil, which is where the Norns lived. And then I think the giant was extremely annoyed when he undressed Loki and found out that he was actually a man. That really wasn't what he'd signed up for.
Loki's there like, still up for it, big boy.
Hello. But yeah, after that, the Norns had to pretty much be kept secret from everyone, including the gods. Because if Loki ever found them, because they owed him a favour. Now, if the Norns, the Fates, owe you a favour, you can pretty much do anything you like. But... they would have had to have honoured it, but if you ask for some, there are some things that Loki would have asked for that would have basically unmade the universe. So they're kind of like, yeah, we can't trust him not to ask for those things, so we're just going to hide from him so we don't have to pay him anymore.
They were just a bunch of cheapskates.
They really were. It's kind of like, yeah, we'll promise to pay you whatever you like, but when it comes down to actually, you know, getting the invoice, we're not so big on it.
Yeah. No, it's there's another one in Irish mythology, and I cannot for the life of me remember the names of it. But it's about this guy who's his bride, or the woman that he's in love with, sort of gets taken by, I think it's a fairy king instead. And so he goes off, and he's got a faithful servant with him as well. And he goes to see that this fairy king, and he sees the, sort of the woman he loves, and they're it's for their wedding. They're about to be wed. And what he does is he finds an old woman, a really, really, really old woman. He says, "What do you want?" She says, "Oh, to be young again." He said, "I will grant that wish." And he transforms her into this really, really beautiful woman who's just uncomparably beautiful. And he goes to the banquet with her, pretending that she is his new bride. And she's lovely. Everyone, no one can stop looking at her. Compared to her, the real bride is very ugly. And the groom sees this woman, and he's filled with jealousy, because I think originally he only stole his current bride because he wanted to get back at the guy already. So he sort of puts forward, he says, "Look, I want your wife instead. I will marry her instead." And the guys, they're like pretending to and R, and he's there like, "Oh, I don't know, I don't know. She's very dear to me. I'd have to have something of great value." And he says, "Please, I'll anything. I'll just please let me have your wife." And he goes, "Okay, tell you what. If you give me your bride, you can have mine." And the guy's like, "Deal, done." So they swap brides. He gets his lover, and he sort of run off together. The groom takes his new bride to bed, and the next morning they wake up and she's the old crone again, but they're officially married, so that's that.
That's not Manann and Machlir, is it?
It might actually be Manann and Machlir. There was a bunch of cows involved as well.
Oh, hang on, that's ringing a bell. Something else. Because there's okay, the name has completely gone out of my head, but I know what you mean. There's the of Slave na Ban, which is the mound just by Slave na Ban is where the fairy cattle came.
No, I think that it starts off with cattle. I think that's how it starts. It starts off with they make a they it's a cow trade.
So in a very traditional Celtic manner, it's about cow stealing.
But no, I think originally it was a gift. It was a gift. The fairy king gave a bunch of the cows in exchange for the woman. And the cows were apparently just majestically lovely, and you just couldn't sort of look away from them.
They gave the best milk and
Yeah,
cheese and things like that.
exactly.
But people started killing each other over them, didn't they?
Yeah, and but anyway, so he got the cows, and then his bride was taken. He's there like, "Oh, wait." And so he goes and he tricks it. I think that's what the story is. The point is that they're all a bunch of tricksters and they're awful. Well, even in Fionn Mac Cumhach, you have Fichtel. So Fionn Mac Cumhach, you as when he sort of started out on his journey, he's with a bunch of priests, I think, or he's with a bunch of that's it, they're not priests, they're poets. He's with a bunch of poets. And whilst he's out with the poets one day, they get jumped by a thief who murders everyone except crosses blades with Finn and can't murder Finn. And then he's there like, "Wait a second, you're Cole's son." And he's there like, "Yes." And he's like, "Oh, great, let's journey together." And Finn's like, "All right." Like, he just murdered your poet friends. Why are you so calm about
But
this?
yeah, I didn't really like them very much either.
Pretentious poets. No one likes writers.
One of the things I like about tricksters is the way that they are chaotic good at best, as in they tend to do good by accident. For example, if you take Raven from the Native American myths, and it appears in various different Native American myths, there's the legend of Eagle, King Eagle, stealing the sun. because he didn't want anyone else to have it, and he was very jealous. So he kept the sun locked away and the entire world was plunged into darkness. And Raven thought, no thanks, I think I'll have the sun for myself. So when Eagle was out, he tricked Eagle's daughter into letting him into the house and stole the sun. Eagle came back a little bit early and Raven kind of crapped himself and dropped the sun in the sky. And then obviously the sun shone down on everyone, so it got shared.
That's nice.
So, accidental good. And then you have the Navajo Coyote, who basically was kind of like epic god in Navajo myth, as in Coyote made everything. Coyote made man. And usually he did it to prove a point, because he thought all the other animals were stupid.
Well, I'm thinking of Set.
Yes, in, Set as well.
Egyptian mythology. It's the party where he was trying to get rid of what's his name?
Osiris? Not Osiris.
Osiris is the sun. After.
Yeah. It is Osiris.
It is Osiris.
It's Horus who's his.
Horus, that's right. So he's trying to get rid of Osiris. It's done brilliantly in Hamish Steele's Pantheon. If again, we're just putting that out there, that's actually about to come out. But it's done brilliantly where he just sets there. They're all having a party. Everyone's having fun, and Set just goes, "I've got a game, everyone. Here is a lovely box. All you have to do is whoever can fit inside of the box gets the box." And Osiris just goes, "I really want that box." And Isis just goes, "Osiris, don't. Set is a notorious trickster. This is clearly a trap." And Osiris is just there like, "Oh, don't worry about it," and climbs into the box, and Set closes the lid and throws him into a river. Which again happened. He's just there like, "Whoop, now I'm king." I love that, yes, Set is technically a trickster, but the thing about the trickster characters is they highlight how dumb everyone else is. How unbelievably trusting. Which is maybe why it's sort of April Fools is good, because it's this kind of, I don't know, but it highlights this need to kind of be aware to and better and stuff like that. And someone else made a really sad point, which is April Fool's, the only day where people actually Google and fact check things before they post them.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
When really we should be doing it always.
Definitely.
At all times. Be critical of things.
I mean, it is interesting. So you've got all these god characters who are, and hero characters who are basically con artists, and at some point almost everybody will get taken in to a certain extent by a confidence man, confidence woman, a con artist. Yeah. And the reason for that is it's very easy to take somebody in because you tell them something they want to believe.
Yeah, it's the same.
You identify a need and you aim down that way, and it can be relatively harmless or it can be really awful. The number of people I have in the library who've been tricked out of life savings and things is really tragic.
Yeah. No, I've been conned before. It's easy to do, even if you feel that you are a self-reflective and critical person. It's very, very easy. And the thing is that con artists don't look like slimy, you know, sort of greaseballs, like they're depicted a lot in films. Con artists look like predators a lot of the time, like you and me, basically. And they look like your friends. That's how they get in, because they look like your friends and they look friendly and they look like they genuinely want the best for you. So
yeah, it's all about soft skills with tricksters and con artists. And obviously, a lot of these myths and legends probably exist to highlight that, but also to highlight that you are very much prey to your own vanities and your own follies. So, you know, if you do something completely unreasonable, you're going to expect somebody to try and take advantage of the fact that you've done that because you've made yourself vulnerable.
Yeah. Now, interestingly enough, especially when it comes to sort of Norse mythology, most of the tricksters and the tricky kind of things were done in answer to something bad done firsthand.
Yeah.
So them setting out directly to harm and take advantage, it was a kind of defense mechanism, or it was about teaching a lesson, not necessarily for, you know, Loki never insulted anyone, Loki didn't kill Balder, Loki didn't do any of these things just for himself. He was teaching a lesson more often than not.
Yes.
So I really feel that sort of, you know, there's a difference between tricksters and con artists. I do not support con artists in the least. I find them detestable because I think that preying on the most vulnerable in society and playing on the trust of people is awful. But the trickster characters can actually provide something valuable instead.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things that we do love about trickster characters is seeing them being caught out and fooled, or, you know, basically caught in their own trap. For example, if you take Odysseus, who had sworn to join Agamemnon and did not want to go to war against Priam of Troy. So he pretended to be mad and started ploughing, a field of rocks and thorns, basically give credence to the fact that he was mad. So they put his son in front of the plough, and he couldn't plough over his son, so he swerved around it, which shows that obviously he was a trickster with a conscience.
Yeah.
As well. So in a way, we kind of like to see them get caught out, even if we know that it's really bad for the future.
Gotta love them. I guess there is one example of a trickster who's a real villain, who I liked in a way that I liked as a character, but totally, you know, detest them. And I think that's probably Iago from Othello.
Yes.
And I watched the Kenneth Branagh one where he was playing Iago.
You had stamina
it's
4 hours.
It's good. We watched it, I think, as a whole group, and it's good, and I liked it. And the thing I liked sort of about Iago, especially in that, was that there was almost a kind of implication that maybe his motivation was he was secretly in love with Othello.
Yeah, that's an interesting way, because I've also seen it, or how I've read it before as well, is that Iago is actually not really a real person. He's almost like the little voice in Othello's head saying, she doesn't really love you.
Yeah.
So he's sort of a personification of Othello's own insecurities, and Othello is conquered by that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's an interesting character because he is faceless in a lot of ways.
His motives are so spurious. He doesn't really know what his motivations are himself a lot of the time.
Yeah, which is why I think that sort of having him in love with Othello but not able to sort of really, and hating Othello kind of because of it, because he can't really do anything with these feelings, it always interested me. I liked that dynamic. But I also, I liked him as a character because there was a point where I almost kind of wanted him to succeed because he put so much work into the whole thing. And I think one of the best bits is that you see him being friendly. You see him as everyone else kind of sees him, which is this trustworthy, really nice guy, and he's there for everyone. And then when he's on his own, he's this vicious, awful person.
Yeah. And the mask really drops, doesn't it?
Yeah. But you're never really sure what his true mask is, because when he's alone, he addresses the audience. So it's almost like, is that actually who he is, or is that who he's pretending to be, and is there something else beneath that?
Yeah.
Interesting trickster character there.
Okay, trickster character I really like, and you're probably going to laugh. El Herrera, the rabbit folklore hero in Watership Down, who shares quite a lot of traits in common with Br'er Rabbit from Uncle Remus's Tales.
You just like rabbits, huh?
It's less that I like rabbits more than I genuinely do like this character. But I think Uncle Remus's Br'er Rabbit Tales, which Ina Blyton sort of paraphrased and made clean for children, did come from original folklore at one point. And the rabbit character, I mean, if you think rabbits tend to be small and weak, they're not. I mean, rabbits are actually vicious little things.
Yeah.
If you put two males in a cage together that's too small, they will castrate each other. That's how, you know, nasty they can be. You do not want to get bitten by a rabbit, put it that way. It is like Monty Python. There's a little white rabbit. Head comes off.
Go on, chop his head off. Look! Sorry.
But, it's one of my scenes. El Herrera in Watership Down is kind of like he's like Robin Hood for the rabbits, basically, in the sense of he always has a trick. He's not strong. He's not, you know, vicious like some of the other animals. What he's got is a good speed to run away and a brain. So lots of tricks to get around all the predators and things that want to eat the rabbits. So he's great.
Yeah.
But he also gets caught out by his own cleverness as well. So I think that works.
Yeah. I like that. You kind of put it there, which I think my favourite trickster of all time is probably Robin Hood.
Yes.
he's just the best. I will come back to Robin Hood. He's just great. And when I at some point I will write a Robin Hood series, I think, just
I'm
because
really surprised that we haven't actually ever covered Robin Hood here before.
That's our next episode then, I guess.
You know, William Tell, the all those who fall into the Robin Hood type category. So yeah, you're right, we should totally do that.
Happy to do Robin Hood. That's not a euphemism. It's a euphemism. Happy to do Robin Hood.
I'm so slow. That's only just like clicked. My God.
And I think we're out of time.
We are out of time. So just a quick recap. As you said, trickster characters, trickster gods tend to be sort of gods or characters associated with communication, because obviously whoever controls the flow of information can control what someone believes ultimately is what I think we're supposed to take away from that. So things like Hermes and Mercury and obviously Loki, and they tend to be weaker but cleverer than other heroes and gods.
Yeah. And they tend not to be warrior characters.
Yeah.
It's their intelligence which gets them by, and more often than not gets everyone else into trouble and out of trouble too.
Yep. And yes, don't forget the fish of April.
Poisson d'avril.
Or running the cuckoo. Running the cuckoo.
So next April, guys, don't forget to buy some cod and just slap it to someone's back and then send them running to someone else's house.
Okay, yeah, I think we'll stop there.
So on that note, we'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders, or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.